SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, on this weekend preview at the races. Jay Privman standing by for some Derby Watch chat. Jay, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Hanging in. How about you? How's everything?
It's all you can do. We're just hunkered down and hoping everybody stays smart.
Exactly. And then more or less, Jay, I guess we're just marveling at the ability of these big race cards to get executed, as scheduled. It to me, everything seems like a complete luxury.
It's definitely different times. So, hopefully things will just get better soon.
Let's talk about last weekend and how the Louisiana Derby performance, Wells Bayou stretching out to the mile and 3/16, and able to pretty much dictate terms. What was your take on what we saw, and how did it affect Derby Watch?
So it looked like to me it was just sort of the way the race was run. It was kind of a paceless race, and that really impacted the race, even though it was a mile and 3/16, furlong farther than Wells Bayou had run, and a 16th of a mile farther than the Derby had been in its previous iterations for about 20 years or so. I thought the soft pace really helped Wells Bayou. It helped New York Traffic, who finished second, and Modernist, who finished third. They were 1-2-4. Early in the race, and they finished 1-2-3. I thought the horses who ran well in the face of that were Major Fed, for instance, who rallied from fourth, rallied from last to finish fourth with not much pace, and Enforceable, who to me was a little bit disappointing. He finished fifth, but he got first run on Major Fed and still was outfinished by him. And I don't think the pace helped Enforceable. I just would have liked to have seen him finish the race off a little bit better based on what I'd seen him do previously. But in terms of Wells Bayou and New York Traffic, the way it impacted the Derby Watch is that they became the two newest additions to the top 20. We moved them on. They have 100 or more than 100 in the case of Wells Bayou, but 100, he got 100 points for that race, and New York Traffic got 40 for finishing second, so they moved on to the top 20 list.
Obviously, Jay, with so much to be determined yet, in your conversation with the horsemen, and you had the initial discussion right after the Derby was the rescheduled date was announced. Any further thoughts about how people are going to deal with? Are they just going to pick spots and make the most of however the calendar unfolds? Are they going to be conservative, do you think? What's some of the horsemen plans, do you think, that are in the works?
Well, there's a couple trainers who have are now looking at maybe running in the Arkansas Derby, which is now on May the 2nd, assuming that all holds. But they're looking at that since really right now the only point-scoring races that we know of are remaining at this point. There will be more added, Churchill Downs has said, but you've got the Florida Derby tomorrow, the Santa Anita Derby scheduled for a week from tomorrow, and then the Arkansas Derby on May the 2nd. And so I think any West Coast trainer who has a horse that's good to go is going to give a serious look at the Santa Anita Derby. The Arkansas Derby remains in play for a number of horses. But there are other trainers who, and I think really most trainers are in this boat, you don't really know what the calendar is going to look like, not just in terms of the Derby preps, but just racing in general. And most trainers are just taking it on a day-to-day basis and making plans as they know, you know, with what they know as of now. And there's less and less information to go on as more tracks go offline. So the options are dwindling. Obviously, at the moment, you can't make any plans to race in New York for at least a month. So that's just one example. You know, there's no racing in Kentucky for at least a month. So a lot of guys are not really sure what they're going to do. And I think that's an understandable place to be. It's just very hard to make plans when there's just so much uncertainty.
And in terms of treading water, you know, wherever you basically can. I mean, with Fairgrounds saying that they'll stay open at least till April 11th, and you know, until there's a place for those horses to matriculate onto, you know, back to their mid season, you know, their spring summer homes, you know, that is entering into this equation significantly as well.
Right. I mean, that's another aspect of it, and it'll get more acute if there's other places that have seasonal racing that eventually their meet ends, or you know, they had to stop earlier. Then those horses are going to need to either stay in place for a while or look to where they would need to go. So those are all things that horsemen are dealing with right now, and they've got a lot on their plate right now in terms, especially, you know, barns that are in multiple jurisdictions in terms of. You're managing those horses, you're managing the help. You saw the story Dave Grenning had the other day about how Todd Pletcher's getting the horses that he had in New York out of there and down to Florida just because he just wants to have everything in one place for the time being.
Sure.
So that's, you know, that's one example of what trainers are going through right now.
Very much. And speaking of some things that some trainers have gone through. People may not have seen a midweek. You had talked to Pat Biancone, who has had a cancer scare and is apparently okay.
I've been in touch with. I try to be in touch with the trainers who have horses on the Derby watch list on a regular basis, and he had told me. That he had recently had his left kidney removed, and then he gave me the whole backstory on it. It was found to have cancer in it. Fortunately for him, it had not spread, and so the treatment was to just remove it and then treat him accordingly. But he was obviously, you know, been anxious over that, and he went public with it after getting a good follow-up report from the doctor on Tuesday,
nice.
Which happened to be when I reached out to him to just get an update on what his plans were for Etain-Indienne, just to, you know, make sure that everything's still good with Etain-Indienne. He's running this weekend, right? And then also to see what I had thought there might be a possibility that with all the uncertainty that I wondered if they'd run Sol Volante in the Florida Derby as well, and he just said that he thinks the horse would benefit from more time between races. He was originally intended for the Wood, and rather than run him a week earlier than the Wood in the Florida Derby, they're going to wait for the Arkansas Derby and then go on from there. So those are the plans with his two colts.
Oh, good. Good for Patrick. And you mentioned Etain-Indienne. Let's talk about the Florida Derby. And same storyline to some extent, Jay, with him drawing wide and with a couple of horses, you know, added to this lineup that seemed pretty extraneous. But Giroux is making a habit of working out trips, so we'll leave it in his capable hands, I suppose, if you're an Etain-Indienne believer. Tis the law. Been very much the, you know, the 800-pound Florida gorilla waiting for this spot, and everybody, I think, you know, pretty much acknowledging if he comes back and runs the kind of race he ran in the Holy Bull, he's going to be a handful.
Well, he's certainly the horse to beat. I mean, he beat Etay Indien pretty handily in the Holy Bull. Etay Indien came back and won the Fountain of Youth. He had the wide draw and was ridden aggressively and led from start to finish against lesser company. But I think he's a better horse now than he was the day of the Holy Bull. So I think Etay Indien can give Tis the Law a run for his money. And, this is going to be the first big field Tis the Law has been in. The biggest field he's been in prior to this is eight horses. And I think we saw in the Kentucky Jockey Club and even in the Holy Bull that he really is not crazy about being, at least at this point, in racing inside horses. And I'll be very interested to see what kind of a trip he works out. He's drawn in seven, so he should be able to stay outside horses and work out a good trip. But Etay Indien's really got his work cut out for him. He's probably got to go from 12, but there's speed inside of him. Sassy but Smart has speed. Candy Tycoon usually is forwardly placed, but wasn't last time. Independence Hall likes to lay close to the pace. My First Grammy has speed. I mean, there's plenty of pace in here, which you would think would help some of the later runners in the race. Chivalry coming out of sprints, I'm sure, will be forwardly placed. So the pace figures to be pretty hot in here. And I'll be interested to see what they do with Etay Indien. If he catches a flyer, I'd imagine they'd just go. But if he doesn't, maybe they just try and tuck in and come from off the pace. I mean, that's what they did last time. They just played the break, and the horse broke so well. It's like, they wanted to go. But if he didn't break well, they were going to have to go to Plan B. And when he broke as well as he did, there was no better option. You just go for it.
Who's the pressure on in here? I suppose Independence Hall has got a kind of a spotlight in here.
I guess. I mean, I don't know what kind of pressure. I mean, now that the Derby's been pushed back by 4 months, there's more opportunities for all these horses to get better and get points. But in terms specifically of Independence Hall, he's a horse that I thought is a little more dressed up than I've been skeptical over a couple of his recent performances, especially in terms of him wanting to go farther than a mile and an eighth. I thought he ran an okay race in the Sam Davis, but I just think he's gotten I think his reputation is stronger than among the public than what I think of him at the moment. He's a good horse, but I don't know that he's, for me, he's not at this point, barring showing me that he wants to go farther than he's shown me so far. I'm not sure that he wants to go out to a mile and an eighth or out to a mile and a quarter. But like I was saying, he's got more time to get better to do that now that the Derby's been pushed back by 4 months.
Jay, usually in a bulky field, there's a horse that you sometimes identify that might outrun odds. Who's anybody sneaky in there that caught your eye?
For me, it's Candy Tycoon, Steve.
Okay.
I thought he ran a sneaky good race in the Fountain of Youth, even though he was a distant second. But I didn't think the race unfolded the way he'd want it to, or you'd want it to for him. He looks like a steadily improving horse who took a little while to come around and is now finally figuring it out. And he's 20-1 on the line, which is probably high. But even if he goes off at 15, I think he's. I think he's offers plenty of value in the gimmicks. I think he'll outrun his odds. I thought his last race wasn't bad at all, even though he was, he was no match for the winner. But he got shuffled back pretty good early, and I thought did well to come on for second.
Now, 14 race Florida Derby Day card tomorrow at Gulfstream, and we'll talk to Mike Welch in a little bit. Hour three, get some opinions from Mike. And Jay, after this, of course, we look toward Santa Anita, and the Santa Anita Derby continues to be amazing. That Santa Anita and Golden Gate plugging right along. There's actually some good couple of notable fillies today in that maiden race, Merneith and the Take Charge Lady American Pharoah filly for Coolmore and Baffert. And Santa Anita Derby wise, how we shaping up?
Potentially a terrific race. You've got Authentic, Honor AP, Thousand Words, just right off the bat with those you know, with those three, and there'll be several more, I would think, because you know, if you've got a three-year-old in California, you better run now, you know, because there's no other Derby preps or rich races on the docket unless you go to Arkansas, and you know, for upcoming races. So I think you'll see Authentic, like I said, Honor AP, both of whom are extremely highly regarded and ranked on our Derby Watch Top 20. You know, and like I said, I think Thousand Words is going to be given a chance to bounce back from his poor try last time. You know, the other interesting thing here, Steve, is that there's potentially a big matchup in the Oaks that day with, you know, the top fillies of Baltus and Callahan meeting in that race. It looked like they were going to go in different directions, one for the Ashland and one to stay at home. But in light of Keeneland canceling its meet, there's you may end up with the two best three-year-old fillies in the West and perhaps the two best three-year-old fillies in the country meeting in the Santa Anita Oaks next Saturday as well. So that's something I'm really looking forward to.
Nice, nice. Well, Jay, appreciate it, and looking forward to tomorrow, and keeping the revised new Derby landscape rebuilt and intact as much as possible, and we'll just keep dancing to whatever tune they play.
Exactly, you just got to take it one day at a time. That's really all you can do.
What's the Thoroughbred LA schedule for this weekend?
We're on. Thank you for asking. We're on from 9 to 10 in Southern California. 1 hour preview show of the races and recap of what's gone on the past week. It's on a local station, KLAA, which is AM 830, but you can listen to it on the interwebs. It's from 9 to 10 Pacific time every Saturday morning. So yeah, thanks for asking about that, and we'll be previewing Florida Derby tomorrow, the card at Santa Anita, the card at Oaklawn, and recapping all the news. And there's always, like, lately, just getting caught up on what's gone on in the past week is insane. I mean, it's, as you know, every day for you has been like, now what? So there's a lot going on, that's for sure.
Well, exactly. I appreciate it, Jay, and we will talk next week. Stay safe.
All right, Steve. Thank you. Stay safe.
Jay Privman, everybody, DRF Privman, and the Derby Watch, and much, much, much more. We're about 20-plus into hour two. Let's step away. Nick Tamaro, Ed DeRosa coming up, as well as Mike Welch, Jeff Siegel, lots more handicapping, weekend preview at the races, SiriusXM, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Developed by Horstmann, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit DRF.com/sportsform Enter code DRF Sports.
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, 25 minutes into hour two. On this weekend preview at the races, we'll go to Houston and connect with Nick Tamaro. Nick, good morning.
Morning, my friend. How are you?
Okay. And everybody good? Wife, baby?
Good. Doing great. Yep. Enjoying plenty of stay-at-home time.
Nice.
Which, it's going great. No complaints so far. We're all healthy, family too. I've told my parents that they need to stay locked inside as much as possible. But we're hanging in. I'll tell you, we don't know and don't want to get too much into the conversation, but if heat and humidity help keep the thing from spreading too much, then Houston won't be a hot spot because it's 90 degrees here and it has gotten very, very warm. So we will find out. But we're doing our very best and hope everybody out there is doing their best to stay safe and at least use this Florida Derby card tomorrow as a little bit of a diversion because it's something that we all definitely need.
Yeah, definitely. I got to add one sad sports note that I woke up to, and you had actually circulated the news of Jimmy Wynn's passing, and I named a horse after the toy cannon, and I was saddened by that news, and not old at all. And he was one of my favorite players growing up.
No doubt about it. Great Astro, always very popular here, and was sad to see. He was only 79, which of course is nothing. It was a shame to see. And yesterday I think was, look, I mean, quite honestly, we've all had some somber days, whether we've been directly affected by what's going on with this virus or not. But I would say that knowing that yesterday, and don't get me wrong, I mean, don't take me out of context either. I know in the grand scheme of things it means nothing. But knowing that yesterday would have been baseball opening day, it would have just been so nice to have had that opportunity to enjoy it. And we know that better days where we're able to get back to some amount of normality are out there. It's just a matter of handling what we can right now to get to that point. And it was a little bit of sad news, like you said, to go on top of a day that for baseball fans was going to end. It was going to be a really happy day, and it will eventually be so.
Yeah. Jimmy Wynn. If you haven't seen highlights, and there's lots of stuff being circulated about the toy cannon. I'll put up a picture of our toy cannon too, who was a. He was a handful. He was somewhat unmanageable, but he was a big, handsome horse. And Thunder Gulch, He's actually on a farm in Maryland, just retired, just being a horse out in a field. Nick, let's get a quick recap from last weekend. See what you thought of the Louisiana Derby and whatever else caught your eye on that card.
I mean, no doubt about it. Obviously, the latter part of the card became the Brad Cox show, and the success that he had not only with Factor This, who had hinted at having some ability last year, clearly has put it all together. Now, before everybody goes and starts to assume that Factor This has become kind of some kind of star in the turf division, you have to understand that, as we alluded to last week, and I think it was somewhat true on the car, on the Saturday card, on the Louisiana Derby Day card, not as much so as it was maybe on the Risen Star card. But obviously, when you take the rails down on that turf course at Fairgrounds, it is very favorable to be towards the inside. I think that last week it wasn't, as I said, it wasn't quite as pronounced as it had been before. But so Factor This obviously was helped certainly by that that situation. And I mean, I guess as far as the non Louisiana Derby races, the one thing that stood out to you is Finite ran very poorly, and I don't know exactly what to attribute it to. It wasn't as if there was a big inside speed bias. She did take a little bit of a hip check coming out of the gate, and I mean, I've noticed in watching a lot of races, I think people may vary in their opinion of this, but I feel like that oftentimes can maybe affect a horse's wind a little bit, and maybe they're not as capable of getting a longer distance, because she really stopped, and that's obviously not the kind of horse that she is. And we were, I think, remarking last week and marveling at the fact that she had just continued to run really well over and over and over, pretty much without fail. And this now sticks out as the lone poor performance in her set of past performances. So clearly, with the schedule in flux for the next couple of months, we'll see if maybe she gets a little bit of a freshening and a reboot headed towards the now new Kentucky Oaks and Kentucky Derby days. And as far as the Louisiana Derby goes, you know, it's a lot of times distances can be a bit of an optical illusion for handicappers, in that you assume that a horse that you might think has some distance limitations ends up running a distance longer than they've gone before, and they actually run very well. And it's because, obviously, at a longer distance, there's a great bit of dependency on pace. And a lot of the outcome, I should say, has a lot of dependency on pace. And I think the Louisiana Derby was a great example of that. Wells Bayou was able to set what was a pretty strong pace, I would say, for the distance and for the caliber of horse. At least that's what Timeform US came out with. And he stayed on very well. And again, the story becomes Foron Giroux being aggressive with a three-year-old on the Derby trail. We'll talk a little bit about that with regards specifically to the Florida Derby. But, you know, Foron knows how to get horses to the lead. And as long as people continue to do what the rider on New York Traffic did, which was basically concede Foron and Wells Bayou the lead, then he's going to continue to win races like that. So I think Wells Bayou is a nice improving horse, very clearly has improved since getting to a dry track, as now his two dry track races are his best by somewhere between 15 and 20 buyer speed figure points. So, you know, it's this crazy kind of situation like we were talking about last week. You've got horses that are going really well right now and that look like they're the quote-unquote now types, but they've got to stay good for 4 months now. So it'll be very interesting how things shake out in terms of what races are available for three-year-olds in the early part of the latter part of the spring, early part of the summer, ultimately getting towards that September 5th Kentucky Derby. But there's no question that Wells Bayou is the type of horse that is always going to be effective in dirt route races. And the manner in which Foron Giroux is consistently riding these horses is a manner that is always going to be successful as well. So it's something that I hope a lot of his colleagues learn from, because if you want to use your speed in dirt routes, especially sprints, I shouldn't exclude them as if it doesn't exist there too, but if you want to use a horse's natural speed in dirt routes, it's going to end up working out for you a hell of a lot more often than not.
And there's no question, and it's pretty stunning at this point. I mean, you keep thinking, well, it won't happen this week. Oh, somebody will catch on, and oh, they'll challenge. And he keeps you know, handing it to them. So, we'll see. Let's dive in and talk about what Giroux's going to have to do in this setting, because of course, in addition to, you know, already being forced out to a difficult post at the trip at Gulfstream. We do have speed. I mean, he's got some speed to contend with, and it just doesn't seem as that it'll be as easy to control things, to dictate things from the front end.
Right, and I will say that I think we would all agree that he made it look easy in the time of youth. It probably shouldn't have been that easy, but he certainly made it so with that that quick dart to the inside from the far outside. And I think the probably the horse and the tactical situation that becomes the most interesting in here is what is Paco Lopez going to do with that scene on TV, because he has the rail. And it seems like it would be, now I know Paco loves to sit right behind the leaders in the pocket, especially on the turf, but it would seem as if it's you're begging for trouble if you're going to let Ete Indian or anybody else get in front of you if you're dealing with a horse like I've seen on TV. I mean, this is a horse that probably needs to be able to see some open space, and you're supposed to put them all on the chase from the inside. Ete Indian also has to cross over and get in front of Independence Hall, who is an extremely fast horse and is capable of being involved in very quick paces and staying on. That pace in the Sam F. Davis was rapid, and he was still plugging away in the stretch. I thought he ran very well that day, and I thought it was a big rebound off the Jerome. I think Rosario is a kind of an interesting fit for him. I know that Jose Ortiz is not riding because he hasn't healed completely from his wrist injury, and Rosario is more of a guy that you would expect on a little bit more of a one-run closing type, but he has familiarity with the horse. He rode him in his debut, so he knows what kind of tactical speed that he has, and I think he ends up being a major player. And clearly, then, Tis the Law is the horse to beat. So Tis the Law, I imagine that the approach will be somewhat similar to what it was last time, which hopefully he'll be able to let whatever early skirmish occurs happen and get his way to the outside. I think Rosario's job on Independence Hall is going to be to make sure that this horse doesn't really see a lot of open space, and that puts Manny Franco into a little bit of a potentially a dangerous spot, because he's going to have a lot of bad memories of what happened in late November at Churchill and how he never really got a free space to run, and by the time he did, it was just a little too late. So the tactics will be very interesting. You've got a couple of these ridiculous filler horses that Gulfstream is notorious for that also have some speed. And the thing is, they won't factor into the finish, but they absolutely could factor into what makes the finish a certain way, if that makes sense. A horse like My First Grammy, for example, if that horse has asked for a lot of speed out of the gate and potentially makes this thing get even quicker, then that might really hinder the causes of horses like Independence Hall and Ete Indian. And then you have the unknown in the race is Gouverneur Morris, who, and I say unknown only because we really don't know how good he is. I personally don't think he's particularly good. I think this horse has a catchy name and an owner who likes to bloviate. So the first listed one, not the second one. So I don't know. I didn't think this horse's race at Tampa was that good. I don't know if I was missing something, but Untitled was coming back on short rest and is a horse that clearly looks like he wants to go a mile or less. So, and it was kind of a workmanlike performance. I mean, we'll see. I guess he could be effective if maybe the pace gets quick and Johnny Velasquez drags him out and lets him make one run. I'm not in any big rush to bet him at 6-1, but I mean, I don't imagine if I can find anything clever leading into it, I would want him to beat me in a pick 4 or a pick 5. So I have kind of a neutral stance on him. The only other horse who's going to get any kind of money, I would think, that may get some mention is Ajaweed. But God, Ajaweed was terrible in the Sam Davis. I have a very hard time betting him off of that performance. And they're going to really have to fly. They're going to have to fly, and they're going to have to come back to him for him to be effective, because he just didn't have much to offer, and it's going to take a lot of improvement.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of need to be all that clever in here. I just we all love to figure out a way to build a ticket and find a price, but I don't sense there's just the top pair. Ete is maybe slightly compromised, but Tis the Law should by all rights should sit beautifully, and I agree with you on Governor Morris. I don't really understand. He's kind of slow, and he's going to have to, speed up considerably. All right. So if we're if we're alive to the anchor leg, Nick, in the Rainbow Six, who's on the ticket?
I mean, I would say that on my main ticket, I'm going to Singleton the law, and I'm going to back up primarily with Independence Hall and at the Indian. And then on whatever lower tier I have, I would use Gouverneur Morris. So I would basically, I'm going to position it so that in order to get alive to all five of, or all four of those horses, I would have to be right in every other leg. And if I'm right enough in three or four of them and maybe have a backup opinion win, then I'm comfortable only being alive to Tis the Law because, I mean, my opinion, as we just talked about, is that he's kind of supposed to win this race.
Let's back up and talk about the Appleton and Turf Mile. I've got some very familiar participants in here. This is all right. This is a good group.
Yeah, it's a good contentious group. You've got a lot of alums from the Canadian Turf, where Sombaye was there just in time. English B was absolutely flying at him. This was one of my weaker. I loved Mr. Dumas in this race, and he ran so bad. I watched the replay back. I was actually at Gulfstream. I came home. I watched the replay back. I was like, is it possible that he ran that bad? And boy, he did. He offered absolutely nothing and now looks like a kind of a rank outsider. And then funny thing is, you look at the buyer speed figures, you know, no matter how you feel about them as far as turf racing goes, he basically ran a little bit better race than he had in some of his recent starts for John Ortiz. He just ran against considerably better company. So, I mean, I guess that makes me feel, I suppose, slightly validated for my bad opinion. But, you know, I don't know what to do with that race. I thought Sombaye was a little bit opportunistic. It was clearly a very, very fast pace, as Gidou set a really strong early clip before tiring. And I'm wondering if the pace is going to be as quick in here. It doesn't look like it. Doesn't look like it's going to be as quick as it was in a race like the Canadian Turf, but it still could be plenty quick. And I guess Sommelier is the horse to beat again. I don't know. I've never really worn to this horse and wasn't sure that he was really great at stake caliber. I'm still a little skeptical as far as whether he is. I'm going to be a little bit of a, probably too much of a wise guy. And I'm wondering if Dr. Edgar can wire this field. I think he's going to be able to get to the lead. I don't expect that El Tormenta is really going to be ridden hard out of the gate with Julian Leperoux. And Paco getting on a horse like this is very interesting. If you're a user of Timeform US, and as I've said in the past, Buyer and Timeform US, we all dine from the same trough. So we get along. And I'm a big believer in Timeform US. This horse has been involved in some insane paces. I mean, the pace in the Artie Schiller two starts back was extremely fast. The pace in the Old Man Eloquent last time was extremely fast. Going back to last year, the pace in the Four Star Dave was extremely fast. Now, this is a horse that really has not been in a moderately paced one-mile race since last year's Appleton. And that was a race that he won wire-to-wire. So I'm going to see if maybe something like this can happen again. I didn't think his race off the layoff was all that bad, and maybe he's in position to move forward second time now off the bench. Horses tend to run for Paco Lopez at Gulfstream like they don't run anywhere else. So this is going to be my sort of lunatic long shot play, and I'm going to hope that maybe he's able to sneak away from this field. There are concerns about some horses maybe stretching out that might offer some speed as well, including Smart Remark and stuff like that. But this is a situation where a guy like Paco knows how to get his horse to the lead, and if he does, then he might just get a little bit brave.
Who else who has to be covered?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's a big mixture of them. Certainly March to the Arch. I would really want to use English B. I think you want to try and find a way to use Bala Rocks. And then I think the obvious Sombaye has to be used as well. I guess I would be sort of foolish having liked both Mike Maker horses in the Canadian Turf if I exclude both of them. I wouldn't use Mr. Dumas more than a C. Probably wouldn't use Hembry as much more than that either. And I think this is a race where you can end up pricing yourself right out of the whole ticket. It's also one of the reasons why you're going to end, a lot of people are going to end up having to lean on Tis the Law in the last leg, because, I mean, you're not going to find a horse in this race that you have a whole lot of confidence in, and certainly aren't going to find anybody that you want to narrow down to a group of maybe anything smaller than, I don't know, four.
Yeah.
So, very tough leg.
There's a potential, I suppose, that you could look at the Pan American and try to tiptoe through there. I mean, plenty of people are just going to, you know, give in to Zulu Alpha and this brilliant winter run that he's on. But Scully this morning was talking about Channel Cat being potentially, you know, forwardly placed and cleverly placed in here. And how do you approach this? Because if it's not Zulu Alpha, it's going to get complicated pretty quickly.
Well, and the other thing that I wonder about is, so in the Mac Dermida, Morocco, I think, was the horse, suddenly set this kind of crazy pace, almost as if he had been entered as a rabbit for Zulu Alpha. And now the same connections have recently claimed Go Poke the Bear, and they also have Bemis Boy in the field. So I'm not sure if maybe a similar type of situation may happen. I will say that if it's run in a conventional way, you would worry that Channel Cat potentially has a big tactical advantage on Zulu Alpha. And I mean, my belief also is that Zulu Alpha's run is a little bit more, I think he's a little bit more effective at a mile and three than a mile and a half. I know that's splitting hairs, but I think he's plenty effective at a mile and a half. He's the horse to beat. You're probably supposed to loan A him, probably loan B Channel Cat, and move on. There are maybe some people that are going to offer some support for Focus Group. I can't even begin to tell people how bad Focus Group's been in his last few starts. And the likelihood that Christophe Clément is going to move a turf horse up off of Chad Brown, it to me is low. This looks like Homeland Security last year, where he ended up buying privately or at auction, I think, a horse that had been in Chad Brown's care, and the horse went backwards. So I don't see it, but I would probably just use the 9 Zulu Alpha as an A and Channel Cat as a B, and move on.
Let's keep going. And third leg of the pick six, you got your Gulfstream Oaks and Lake Avenue, who had gone up to New York to run in the Busher, and that didn't work out. And meanwhile, in the Devona Dale, here was Spices Nice looking like the now filly against Tonal Shape. And Tonal Shape just picked up where she left off in the forward gal and went off by herself in the Devona Dale. So I don't know how much more creative we need to be in here, but Gulfstream Oaks, mile and a 16th.
I mean, it sure feels like the winner's going to come from one of those three, right? I don't think there's a whole lot that you need to try and find beyond that. I think that as far as Lake Avenue goes, you know, this is either going to be one of those situations where you say, okay, well, the Busher sort of tipped her hand that she did not move forward from 2 to 3, or it's going to be a situation where you say, well, this was a very cagey Bill Mott type of move. And the reason why I say that is, she was probably positioned in terms of the number of workouts that she had to run in a race like the Devona Dale. And it was very surprising to me that instead of running the Devona Dale, she was sent up to the Busher. The Busher, more than likely, and I'm just guessing, based on the way he's conducted his barn's business for a long time, I'm guessing it was a prep for something like the Ashland or potentially the Gazelle. And the plan was always to just use it as a springboard. And, of course, there will be no Busher or there will be no Gazelle or Ashland, at least anytime soon. And so she's rerouted here. The Busher pace was extremely fast. And she did not, she obviously succumbed readily once Kansas Kiss made a big move off the turn. But that was a very tough spot for a horse to come back off the layoff, having to deal with that kind of pace. And now I think second off the layoff is clearly in a much better position to handle herself. And, you know, I would say that you wonder about whether Spice is Nice or Tonal Shape are going to take. I would say of the two, I would think Spice is Nice is going to be a little bit more effective around two turns than at a mile and a 16th. This is the first time either one of them are going to go around two turns. Tonalist Shape to me looks a little bit more like kind of a compact one-run type that might be more effective around one turn. The pace in the Devona Dale was also very, very slow. But that being said, I mean, I thought Spicy's Nice was disappointing. I thought she was supposed to come into that field and really take care of business. I'm going to find a way to use Swiss Skydiver as well. I don't think that she ran all that great in the Rachel Alexandra, but I do think that the quality of that field on that particular day is worth mentioning, and I think she's a horse that can sit back and make one run, because if Lake Avenue shows speed and Lucrezia shows speed and Inveterate shows speed, then this thing can get really fast. And the mile and the 16th races with that sort of short run to the first turn have a tendency of getting a little quick, and if Paco Lopez gets Swiss Skydiver moving early enough, I think she could be dangerous. She's going to be a good enough price too, but I mean, I think primarily you're using If the winner doesn't come from the 4, 5, 6, 7, or 9, I know that's 5 horses, which is obviously a lot, but the way you break them down in terms of your A's, B's, and C's, I think if you're planning on that group of 5 offering the winner, then you can get out of it with just that number.
All right. Moving backwards, 2 more legs within this sequence, the Orchid and the Sand Springs.
Yeah, I mean, this race is sort of a showdown between 2 horses that got away with murder on the front end in their respective last starts, and Mean Mary and Elizabeth Way. And Elizabeth Way was a horse that Roger Atfield saw fit to run at a graded stake off a maiden win, and here was Paco Lopez just tooling along on the front end, setting a slow pace, and she was able to win that day. Now goes extra ground. I don't really know if that's going to be a particularly big problem for her, but I do think that this is very much a tougher field and a race that should be quite a bit more difficult, especially because I don't really think you can plan on her having such a free run on the front end. Louis Sayas could have been arrested for the theft in the La Previante on the Pegasus undercard. That was quite a performance and quite a ride by him. We know Sayas, when he gets loose on the front end, can be very, very dangerous. And so, I'd be more inclined to take a little bit of a swing against Mean Mary. Now, that being said, when you're talking about a multi-race bet like the Rainbow Six, you don't want to be beaten by a horse like Mean Mary. So it's just a quite a bit more difficult spot, I think, for her than she's seen in recent starts. And I'm expecting Elizabeth Way to offer that same kind of speed. Interesting horses at prices to me. Get Explicit, I thought, had a perfectly fine trip last time. But horses like Starship Jubilee and Beautiful Lover and Magic Star that she was squaring off against, they're just much tougher animals than what she's facing today. I know she didn't run particularly great in the La Prévoyante. I think a lot of that had to do with the ride that she got and the fact that the pace was so slow. So I'm willing to take a chance with her. I think Gentle Ruler is a must-use. Clearly, the quicker the pace gets, the better. Sure would be nice before the championship meet ends for Chris Landeros to get off the dock. I don't know if he's won a race the last 2 days. But this is a horse that got really good last year, and other than been really having a bad trip in the way up, didn't run poorly at all at any point in 2019. So I would think that she's very dangerous. And then, of course, you have Mean Mary, who you shouldn't find yourself being beaten by simply because of the running style that she has. And I'm going to use Bo Bell, who I thought got jammed up a little bit inside in the Zagora, and I wanted to bet back on Pegasus Day, and she didn't show up that day. So I think that she has a chance to maybe be in that second flight of horses and inherit the lead if things get a little dicey at some point. So this is another leg, I think, where you got to go pretty wide. That's why you're relying later on in the sequence on Zulu Alpha and Tis the Law both. So it's one I think that's going to require a lot of patience and probably a lot of forgiveness in terms of handicapping with horses that you want to give another shot.
And what else?
And then the kickoff is
Sand Springs.
The return of Newspaper of Record. Yeah, was a little kind of pleasantly surprised to see her back. And we'll see who ends up riding her. I mean, my guess would be based on who's available, John Velasquez, with Javier Castellano now being sidelined with the coronavirus, and best wishes to him and his family. This will be really interesting because, clearly her and Irad did not click in 2019. And I don't know whether it was maybe a function of her not maturing from 2 to 3. And it really, I think, was more than that, because it's one thing if a horse doesn't mature. She went backwards. And she clearly was not reacting to being rated. She was not reacting, really wasn't reacting favorably to anything. And maybe just ended up needing some time and eager to see what the workout reports have to offer in terms of what she's been doing in the morning at Palmettos. And this looks like a race where she's not going to get the early lead. So it's going to be very interesting to see if she can be rated at all. Jakarta is a horse that's very quick, and you would imagine that the goal is going to be to win the race to the first turn, with everybody understanding that I think sitting behind Newspaper of Record at a mile is probably not a particularly novel idea. A Valedictorian on the outside probably won't be pushed all that much to get to the lead, but she's certainly going to be forwardly placed. And then you have Get Mother of Rose, who was victorious last time out in the Honey Fox, and that was the day to have her, no doubt about it, but there's still reason to believe that she can be effective again. This is a horse that's clearly done her best work now in Florida, and showed a new dimension in coming from quite a bit off the pace, going long at least, which was something she hadn't done before. So we'll see how this this shakes out. I'm very interested to see Newspaper of Record back. I'm unsure. I really have no idea what we're going to get. And so with horses like that, excuse me, you don't want to be betting them at 9-5 or potentially less. I don't know how much less than that, but she does have a big reputation. So we'll have to see. My hope is that the pace is going to get quick, and I'm going to bet Zofel. So, because I thought that she didn't have the greatest of trips in the Alstall, and now gets Joel Rosario, going to be coming from off the pace. I think Brendan Walsh is the best trainer no one talks about, and this is a horse that ran a race two back in the Pago Hop that would win this race. So I'm going to hope to... I'm not going to go particularly wide in here, and if I'm out in the first leg, that's fine with me. I don't need to torture myself for 4 hours. But I'm going to use Zofel as an A. I'm going to use Newspaper of Record as an A, and I'm going to use a couple of backups. And if she comes back in fine fashion, then I'll get through it. But in all likelihood, to me, if she loses, that's going to be because this was a fast pace, and then that's going to really play into the hands of somebody like Rosario and Zofel.
Now, and of course, Get Mother a Rose, who we have championed this winter, and she took care of everybody last time. You mentioned Zofel. I will bring up another Brendan Walsh elsewhere on the card. How about the 3-year-olds on the grass? Vitology, may very well be on his way to being, one of the top 3-year-old turfers in the country this year, if he's not already.
I'll tell you, I agree, and I thought his comeback race was very, very good. I thought it was. You know, I was being kind of a wise ass and thought, oh, he got a really fast pace to run out of Keeneland, blah, 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 he's overrated, so on and so forth. And but I thought his Palm Beach was very, very good. In fact, I get it. Like, it's cachet to bash the Gulfstream Park Morning Line Maker. I get it. I'm sure he tries very hard. A lot of times it's very off base. But I saw people mocking the 7-2 Morning Line on Decorated Invader. Who the hell would make Decorated Invader the favorite over Vitalogy? I mean, Vitalogy is clearly the favorite in this race and probably is going to dip down off of his 5-2 odds. And to me, having shown the ability to sit close to the pace last time, I mean, I think he's in position to take another step forward. So I thought he looked like a pretty obvious winner of this thing. And I think if you're going to look to get involved in maybe the early pick five or something, I don't think you'll have to go terribly deep beyond him. With that being said, I mean, South Bend is a nice horse. Obviously, we don't know what we're going to get from Decorated Invader coming back off the layoff, and you do have some real speed in here. So it'll be interesting. It'll also be interesting who ends up riding him, because obviously no Castellano, and they seem like a good fit for one another. So yeah, we'll have to see. But no doubt it's interesting to see. I want to see guys like Brendan Walsh with good horses left and right. And that allowance win that he had last week with, I forget the horse's name, was it Golden Tappet? That was on Saturday. That was
yep.
very, very impressive.
Yep.
That was a horse that had run really well on, I think, on the Saturday of NHC, and a lot of people had him, and that propelled them into contention. And, boy, he came back and validated that. That was a very, very strong effort. And with the bad break, and he was in hand around the turn and into the stretch, it was a very, very strong effort. So it would be nice to see, of course, who knows when, but whenever we get a chance to see a horse like Golden Tappet again down the line, we'll have to see. We'll have to see what they have to offer.
Anything else on the card?
I thought the House Hope was an interesting race. I'd like to see if Harvey Wallbanger can come back and run to that two other than win last time. We'll see if he gets glued to the inside by Dylan Davis like he was with Corey Lannery. That was quite a performance. But I'm not thinking he'll have quite the same to offer. I thought that race was really difficult. I didn't really have a strong feeling about anything. I did think that Rare Form was involved in a really fast pace in the Gulfstream Mile against horses that are just a little too tough for him, and was maybe a little interested to see what he could do in a slower paced race with Saez getting on board. So he might be one that I take a little bit of a look at. But otherwise, there were a couple of little. There's a lot of big fields. Obviously, it seems like a day where you want to be as judicious as possible with your money, because it can evaporate very quickly. But I thought the Sanibel Island was a kind of a fun race. There's a lot of speed in it, which is good because Cheermeister has been able to wire a couple of fields in a row, setting slow to moderate types of paces. So I think you may want to look for horses that are going to have an opportunity to reverse that decision on her. And there are a few for sure, including She's My Type and Lucky Polly, who didn't really have anything go their way when chasing her. And now in a faster paced race, I think they'll be in a heck of a lot better spot.
Well, it's a card that's got something for everybody. And whether you're excited about the Rainbow or if you're going to play the Express Bet Showdown races, that'll certainly, you know, include many of these we talked about. Whatever you want to do, you got a very, very fun day of racing, and thank goodness, Nick, because everybody could use it. It's actually a nice card today too. So we'll just we'll keep hanging in, and hopefully next week we're talking about Santa Anita and Santa Anita Derby Day.
Steve, I hope next week we're talking about racing at all. So I'm gonna take what we can get, right?
Exactly. Let me. I got about 2-3 minutes before we wrap. Let me ask you one question. We've been asking everybody, and for the people that are coming to the game, Nick, and are curious, you know, we've heard that there's been a big influx of signups at the ADWs. What do you suggest for people that are looking at the game for the first time? How do they learn? What should they read? What should they utilize?
I mean, obviously, if you can get your hands on the Andy Beyer books that are going to help you get through some of the nuances of handicapping, that's a big step. You know, taking some of the daily racing form tutorials, if those are the past performances that you're trying to use, just to understand what the running lines look like, to give yourself a little bit of an understanding of pace and class and things like that. It's going to be hard to do that in sort of a crash course type of system, but I think there are ways that you can maybe streamline a little bit of it and make things a little bit easier for you. So I would say that obviously betting on racing is about boiling down a tremendous amount of data and trying to find what your niche is within that context. So understand that obviously it's a much more involved process than picking who you think is going to win in a -110 type of spread situation. But you also don't have to wait 3 hours to see the result. So and you're going to get much better odds. So be patient, find what makes you comfortable in terms of what you've looked at. And one of the good things about what's going on right now is we have all this televised racing. So listen to a lot of what they're talking about, especially on the Fox Sports 1 broadcasts, where I think they're going to have, I think Andy's going to be involved in them this weekend. He hasn't been the last couple of weeks, but he's going to talk at probably a little bit more of a graduate level for a new person, but he's going to give out some incredible information that'll help you in your process. And yeah, I mean, take this opportunity to figure out what makes you comfortable in terms of handicapping, betting, things like that. There are obviously a ton of options. Don't necessarily chase something like the Rainbow Pick 6 because you see it available with this huge carryover. Find something that fits a little bit more of your budget and your profile, at least right away. And by all means, I mean, anybody listening and wants to, feel free to interact with me on Twitter or Steve or anybody else that you hear on this show or anybody else at all, because racing people are all friendly and we're all looking to get as many involved in our game as possible. This could be one of the few bright spots in otherwise a pretty dark situation. And we'll take all the new passengers aboard our ship that we can get.
Exactly. Well put. NTAMM 1215, everybody. Nick Tamaro. Nick, stay safe, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds great, Steve. Good luck. Thanks for having me.
Nick Tamaro, folks. Let's take a break. We got exactly an hour, and we've got Mike Welsh going to join us next. And it's funny, just as I say that, picture comes up from exactly a year ago today. Boy, we were all at Gulfstream for the sale, and it was such a beautiful afternoon, and well, yeah. Yeah. Well, there'll be other beautiful afternoons. Just going to be patient and careful. Let's take the break. Mike Welch next. Jeff Siegel ahead. Ed DeRosa begged off. Ed's got the kids and at home, and he says it's proving today to be a little overwhelming. So the twins and EJ3 keeping Eddie busy. Eddie likes Independence Hall in the Florida Derby. If he has a couple of minutes at the end of the show, we'll slip him right in. All right. Yeah, everybody. I'm hearing from lots of dads that may have some newfound respect for teachers and their spouses, right? Back after this with Mike.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield, the leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly